We're here in the Congressional Corner with our friend Brad Hayes, scholar in residence, we like to call him here at WAMC. He knows so much. So, Brad, welcome.
Great to be on.
Okay, let's start. The final countdown before Election Day. You're a political scientist. You know all about polling. You know so much. Let me ask you this question. How we keep getting told that Hillary is locked in. Is she?
I think it's all but certain that Clinton wins. There are a variety of reasons behind that. We can point to things that relate to polling. For example, historically, with less than 3 weeks remaining before the general election, polling numbers don't move more than about 3 points. Mm-hmm. Right. So that if you're looking at where Clinton is relative to Trump, that's a comfortable margin for her. Right. So if the historical norm holds true, she should win and win fairly easily. And then you can look at kind of, you know, softer factors, too. You can look at things that are difficult to measure, like momentum. You know, this clearly favors Clinton. You know, to this point, you know, Trump seems to be actually losing momentum, not to be gaining momentum, which is, deeply problematic when you're behind and trying to gain voters. You know, if you just look at the respective party, Democrats are not terribly divided, while the Republican Party is quite divided. If you look at the polling numbers again, you know, Republican support for Trump is at 80%. That's really low, and that's a real problem for him. You know, as a point of comparison, Democratic support for Clinton is about 91%. So, maybe Trump could make that up in independent votes, but he's only about 4 points ahead of Clinton among independent voters. So that's not going to cover that gap. And then if you really want to kind of begin digging down, you want to look at both money and organization. Clinton has kind of vast financial resources that Trump simply doesn't have, that allows her to do things like flood states with ads, spend money on getting out the vote. Clinton can use her financial resources to go on the offensive. And Trump does not have that same money. So we see the Clinton campaign using their resources in states that they never really anticipated doing so, just because there's a chance. Places like Arizona and Georgia. So, you know, that's quite telling. But moreover, the Clinton campaign has dedicated extensive resources to building an on-the-ground operation, right? So they're organized on the ground. And so come Election Day, you would expect Clinton to have a real advantage over Trump, who has basically no organization and has basically said that he'll rely on the RNC. And given the fragmentation in the Republican Party right now, it's unlikely that they're going to be dedicating, you know, as many resources as they would otherwise. So, you know, if you're looking at kind of those, I guess, four factors, it looks like it's going to be Clinton all the way.
So let's talk a little bit about the basket of deplorables. As you know, Hillary at one point said that the people who were for her were a basket of deplorables. There is, and there's always been in this country, a so-called silent majority. And so my question, Brad Hayes, is how are we so sure that there aren't people who refuse to tell who they're going to vote for to their psychiatrists, to their mothers, to their... but that they may come out in tremendous numbers and surprise everybody, a la Brexit, which he keeps saying.
Right. Well, I think for reason number one, one of the reasons why I would be kind of dismissive of that idea is that Trump has done about as well as his polls would indicate throughout. So you might think back, okay, well, if we look back at the primary, people like myself were saying that, Trump will fade. And that's because it's not that we weren't looking at the polls, but we were discounting the polls. We were saying, like, other things will surface and the polls will change and blah, blah, blah. No, if you just would have gone by the polls, you know, we would have been pretty accurate. I think many of us talked ourselves out of the polls, and that was a mistake. So if you look at the polls, where they were in the primary, they tell us that, you know, where Trump was going to be, but it also tells us something about kind of his ceiling of support among likely voters. And polls are quite sophisticated, and they've been pretty accurate in the past at predicting, you know, who is a likely voter and who is not, using that as a way of kind of formulating who's likely to prevail in given states and then nationally.
Rasmussen shows Trump winning by 2 points.
I would take Rasmussen with a grain of salt. They have not been as accurate as many other polls. Okay, so let's talk though a little bit about the elephant in the room here, which is the Trump strategy, right? That there seems to have been, you know, if not an explicit strategy, certainly a tacit strategy of the Trump campaign to reach disaffected, undereducated white voters, right? And this is part of a strategy that's based on the idea that if you mobilize whites in large numbers, you don't need a diverse group of supporters. And studies show that, you know, if demographic turnouts were the same in 2012 as it was in 2004, then Romney would have just barely lost. He would have still lost, but he would have just barely lost, right? So if you then kind of project a little bit and you say, okay, to win, Trump needs to improve his share of the white working class votes by 3 points in Ohio and Florida, in 5 points in Pennsylvania and New Hampshire, and hold what Romney got in North Carolina, then he actually wins. And so I think that's kind of to your point that, you know, that it feels as if it's a possibility. When you just throw out those numbers, they're not huge. And you would think that maybe he'd be able to do that. But the problem in this is that kind of in crafting positions and a persona that appealed to, you know, kind of white working class voters, he lost others, right? Part of that's about his personality, but the massive gender gap, for example, has been notable. You know, we're looking at, you know, 15 to 17 points in the gender gap right now, which is, you know, unprecedented. And, you know, if we're looking at who he's lost white college educated women. That's the group that has really fled from him in sizable numbers. And this is kind of, you know, about his campaign strategy and the way in which that's resonated, you know, with certain kind of people that we might have thought were core supporters, but have turned out not to be.
I wanted to explore the fact that his core in the polls seems to hold.
Yes.
So in other words, he started with about 40%. He has a little less now, but they hold. So they're there.
They're absolutely there. But it does show the why so often candidates pivot from the primary to the general.
Sure.
And in terms of trying to broaden that tent. And Trump has either proved totally unwilling or incompetent to expand that coalition. And you look at the last debate, right? The last debate was the chance to really do this, to appeal to a broader swatch of the population. And they started out, if you recall, on the Supreme Court. And it immediately turned to abortion. And Trump said that his justices would overturn Roe. Well, he has this massive gender issue, particularly among educated white women. And, you know, he takes a position that runs counter to policy preferences if you just look at any poll. So he's had a number of missteps, a number of really significant errors that kind of, I think, show his inexperience in the political arena.
I only have a couple of seconds. I want to ask you this. If it had been one of the other guys, a Pence or somebody like that, could the Republicans have beaten Hillary Clinton? I need a yes or no answer.
Could they have?
Yeah.
Yes, but really unlikely. Playing field just benefits Democrats right now.
Our friend Brad Hayes, scholar in residence here at WAMC, professor of political science at Union College, PhD in government politics from the University of Maryland, and he knows all about this stuff. And Brad, thanks so much. When we come back again, let's talk about the Senate and the House.
Sounds great.